Hey everyone, Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at WorkCompExperts.com.
Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House with Michael Russo and Anthony LaPanta. A very fun show for us today. Zach Parise, the all-time leading goal scorer in Minnesota history, and only 27 goals from tying Marion Gaborik from the all-time leading goal scorer in Wild history, will be joining us in a little bit. And we just got off the phone with Zach, who was kind enough to join us as he drove to St. Cloud to pick up his son. Anthony, first of all, this is a weird time because really the last couple of weeks, it's like you just felt like imminently we were going to have a date for the start of training camp, the start of the season, what it's going to all look like. But lately, the last week, it's very clear that we're back to familiar times where the NHL and the NHLPA are fighting about money. And basically the deal here is that the players back in July extended the collective bargaining agreement for the sole purpose, not just a return to play, but they felt like it was going to sort of set the table of what life would be like for them in the middle of a pandemic, that they would know exactly what their salaries would be this year. And suddenly the owners are saying, wait, hold on a minute. You want us to have a 50-game schedule with no fans in the crowd. How do you expect us to pay the players X? And now they're fighting again.
Yeah, but I haven't jumped off the bandwagon, so to speak, with this yet. I still think that reasonable minds will prevail here. I think you've got two sides that absolutely need to play. And because of that, I think the motivation will be to get a deal done. And, we used to talk with the old Wild GM, Chuck Fletcher, so many times, and he'd say, when both sides want to get a deal can get done very easily and very quickly. And I think that same is true here between the NHL and the Players Association. And yes, there's contention, there's no doubt. And from a player's perspective, you're going to say, we made a deal and now they want to tear it up. From an owner's perspective, you're going to say, but it's reasonable to say none of us knew what this was going to look like when we made the deal, and it looks worse than what we were hoping, so we just need to adjust it a little bit. You can understand both sides of the argument, and I just think you've got two sides that know that without a doubt, they got to get this done. They got to get done on time, because in order to have a season and have a season that ends in time for the Olympics to start in July, it's got to start in that first week to 10 days of January in order to make it work. So I think you're going to see two sides come together and get this done.
And Zach is real candid about his thoughts on what the owners are doing right now. And he was really, it was interesting just listening to him talk about the difference between potentially playing in hubs or in home arenas. It's looking now more like the latter, unless COVID-19 basically puts the league in a position where they have no choice but to start in hubs. But the players and the owners both would rather play in their home arenas and travel. So Zach talked about that. The other interesting thing that Zach talked about, Anthony, is the captaincy of the Minnesota Wild. And, Billy Guerin told me a week or two ago that they are definitely going to have a captain on the Minnesota Wild this upcoming season. There will not be a rotating of the A's. He just doesn't believe in not having a captain's. And Zach, who, as we know, has worn it for USA Hockey, has worn it with the New Jersey Devils, he made it very clear that he feels like he would, be proud to wear that C here, but he also feels that whoever it is, it's up to the leadership group to support that person and have essentially a leadership group in that locker room.
Yeah, and it's been interesting that Zach's name hasn't come up as frequently or maybe as obviously as you would have guessed. This is a guy who's been a captain. He was a captain for the national team. And maybe this is a time where you say, okay, as great a captain as Miko was and as big a part of the supporting cast as Zach was, maybe it's time to let him be the guy with the C and see. I mean, nobody can question what this guy has produced throughout his career, what kind of work ethic this guy brings, and effort level and energy level. And I mean, I think you've got a guy here who's been selected a captain at higher levels than this and at the same level as this. So I think it's interesting. And I had the same conversation with Billy, and it became very evident to me that he values the role of a captain inside the room too much to leave it to chance or to have it be some kind of rotating. So he'll be very hands-on in this decision. And, you know, I mean, you're talking about two of the top 10 goal scorers all time among American players in Billy Guerin and Zach Parise. So I don't know if you've ever had guys with that much in common that will be the guys ultimately potentially making the decision to pick one or the other guy as the captain.
War Seats in the House with Michael Russo and Anthony LaPanta is brought to you, by the way, by Profile by Sanford, Aquarius Home Services, Twill in the Edina Galleria, Bosch Law Firm, and State Farm agent Tony Hoagland. It was a fun conversation with Zach Parise that Anthony and I had. We touched on Kirill Kaprizov. We talked about Kevin Fiala and his emerging, how hard of a style it is for Zach Parise to play. We talked about family a lot. He really talked about the North Star colors and the uniforms that the Wild are going to be wearing this year with the reverse retro, his mom, Dawn, his children, and Thanksgiving. So without further ado, here is a conversation with Anthony LaPanta and myself with Zach Parise. As mentioned, very happy to be joined by Zach Parise, the all-time leading goal scorer amongst Minnesota-born players with 386. He's 9 goals from tying Phil Housley for the most power play goals in history for Minnesota-born players. And I was just saying to Anthony off the air, Zach, it's a shame that we might not have a full season this year because you're 27 goals from becoming the all-time leading goal scorer for the Wild. But you could do that in a 48-game season or a 56-game season, can't you?
Catch a little fire and anything can happen. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully, I'd love to see the full 82, but I don't know where we're going here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good place to start, Zach. Man, it sure looked like everything was just going, maybe we were just wishful thinking, but everything was going perfectly. We're going to have an announcement at some point here of what training camp will look like, when season will start, what it'll look like. But now suddenly, we're back to what's usually happens between the NHL and the NHLPA, and that's some battling right now. And the biggest thing here is back in July, the NHL came up with a new collective bargaining agreement to have the players vote on to extend the CBA. And the whole point of that was, one, to have a return to play last summer, but also to give you guys an indication of what you would be paid this season. And that is, you're basically playing for 72% of your salaries. Well, now owners are saying, well, COVID's still here. We might not have fans in the building. We're not going to play 82 games. Well, that's too much money to pay right now. Where do things stand right now? And does it bother you that it feels like the goalposts have been moved from a situation where it felt like the collective bargaining agreement was extended based on what this season would look like?
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I haven't been on any of the calls myself, so but I do try to find stuff secondhand, and I mean, it is frustrating because you feel like we had some traction that we were going to be, you know, these start dates of January 2nd, and then all of a sudden you hear talks kind of broke off, and it is a little disappointing. I mean, when you have that agreement for things moving forward, everything looks good. We got I think it was a 6-year extension on the CBA, you know, with which I feel like we gave up some concessions, you know, which we always do somehow. And now all of a sudden we want to just tear that up and start over. Like I that blows my mind that we're even having this discussion right now. It's not fair. You know, it's, we made that agreement. That's why we did it. That was part of the return to play. And now they come back and are asking for more concessions. And at some point enough is enough. And so, you know, we hope that everything will get sorted out and we can play the game. But unfortunately, there's all this business part on the side that has to happen first before we even step on the ice.
And Zach, I mean, what's got to be real concerning for you is that time's ticking, especially for somebody like you. I mean, you're 36, you've got 5 years left on your deal, but this is valuable time in your career. And last season was cut short for you. And now this year is going to be probably a half season.
Yeah. I mean, selfishly, that feel like that type of stuff it's out of your control, but it is pretty annoying when you're at a spot where I am and you just want to play. And this type of stuff keeps popping up where, you know, all of a sudden you play last year, you know, 69 games, and then hopefully we get 48 in this year. And then not to mention, you know, missing half a season from being injured and missing, you know what I mean? So it's just like, at some point you want to get 82 on the schedule here pretty soon.
Well, and that to me seems like part of the reason why there's still some optimism. I think a lot of players share your feeling, whereas we want to get this done. We want to get on the ice quickly. We want to get as many games as possible on the schedule. And if it can't be 82, 60 is better than 48 and 56 is better than 48. Don't you think there's at some point both sides have to have games in order to survive here? I mean, no matter what the percentages are, the percentages of nothing are nothing. So it just feels to me like both sides are going to realize that and say, hey, we got to figure this out and get on the ice.
You know what? I thought the same thing in 2005 too, when there was a lockout. I thought the same thing in 2012, and nothing seems to change where, like you said, zero is zero. But I do believe at some point the PA and the players have to say, you know what? Like this is getting a little crazy now from these concessions that we seem to have to keep giving. You know, there's no doubt in my mind, every single player wants to play. That's not a question. We all want to play. But to use Mike's word, when you keep moving the goalposts and you want to rip up something we just agreed upon, doesn't seem very fair. And I think a lot of players share that, or it's just like, you know, then why did we disagree to what we did a couple months ago? What was the point of that? What was the point of that negotiation? You know?
Yeah.
No doubt. On the other side, there seemed to be in this last week or so some significant positive steps worldwide that indicate that we might be getting somewhere back to life as normal. And that certainly has to be in the back of everybody's mind too, that, you know what, it's at least now we can see the end of the tunnel, so to speak, that maybe this doesn't have to be 3 months in a bubble or even a whole season in a bubble, that we might be getting closer and closer to the point where you could just go back to, I know you made the point about 82 games, right now, however many games it is, at least back to where we've got arenas with fans in the stands and teams traveling from city to city like normal. I mean, it's got to be just like such a relief for guys like you to say, at least I can now see the horizon, and maybe it's the following season before it's 82, but we're somewhere closer to what hockey used to be.
Yeah, I think to me that was music to my ears when I heard that about no bubbles. You know, I was like, thank God, you know what I mean? We can start playing in rinks again and hopefully, I mean, get some fans. Let's get back to normal life here pretty soon. I think, you know, we're all, if the lockdowns are enough, and let's, hopefully we can get back to doing what we want to do here pretty soon and enjoying life a little bit.
How incumbent, if they do go without the hubs, and to know what Zach's talking about, if you haven't been paying attention as a listener, is that originally the NHL was going to basically have four modified hubs to start things off, not be as strict as what we saw in Edmonton and Toronto. And the big reason for that is that there almost certainly needs to be an all-Canadian division this year because of the border issue between Canada and the United States, and that these teams are not going to be able to fly back and forth freely. So the NHL was originally going to have these hub cities. Well, actually, it was the owners that began to scoff here because they want to trigger endorsements. They want to trigger naming rights for buildings, sponsorships, things like that. But now, all of a sudden, if you are going to be traveling back and forth inside your division, Zach. How hard will it be, or incumbent is it on the players to, one, be safe and make sure that they're, you know, not putting themselves in positions to be exposed to the virus? But do you think that we could get to a point where maybe the league has almost like baseball type homestands where you're playing teams 2-3 times in a row?
You know, I wouldn't mind that. I heard that was talked about a little bit, and I thought that was a great idea. You know, when we go out to LA and Anaheim, or, you know, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, I mean, why not, you know, bounce back and forth between LA and Anaheim and play, you know, LA one night, then go to Anaheim and go back and forth. I mean, when you're out there, why not hammer out 2-3 games? I mean, I've always thought that before this whole thing started. So I think that's a great idea. Less travel. I mean, to me, that would be a great idea for the league to implement.
Well, it'd be fun, especially if you're talking about a full season that's only within a division where you're only going to see 7 opponents. So let's say that it's 55 games or something like that. You're playing 8 games against each of these teams. You might as well knock them out in 2 or 3 game blocks, a la baseball. Give it like a playoff feel for hockey. I think I'm with you. I think that would be a lot of fun. The only drawback to that, I suppose, is that you're catching the same team in the same state all the time, where you got them for 3 games and it happened to be when this guy was out, or you got them when they were playing great and everybody was healthy. And when you spread it out over the season, you often see teams in very different states of being throughout those matchups.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, nothing's perfect. I think when you're trying to piece together what makes the most sense on a season, that might be the way to go. But I do agree with what you're saying. I mean, maybe you're getting a McDavid in the middle of a 15-game point streak, and that's not the guy you want to be facing at the time. You know what I mean? Well, that's what you're dealt with. And, you know, I 2-3 games would be good enough. I think if you start going into 4 or 5 against the same team in a row, I don't think that's a great idea. You need to have a 3, to me, would be the max that you can play the same team in a row during the regular season.
Just in terms of season prep, I know you're a vigilant workout guy to get your body ready for a season. And I know that you've been an experimental guy too, with some different ideas about training different ways and working on different skills. How difficult is it for you right now when you don't know exactly when that date is, and therefore can't as accurately kind of backdate yourself, so to speak, to here's where I have to be at this point, here's where I want to be at this point, here's when I need rest, here's when I need to ramp it up? How much of a challenge is that for you?
I think what was harder was the pause before in March, and then the unknown of going into a playoff series. To me, that was harder than what it is now. I think at least now we have a good idea, and we've had a decent idea, you know, looking at whether it was December, January. At least we've had a ballpark of what we're looking at. So it hasn't been that bad now. I mean, everyone's kind of on the same page, or skating 3-4 times a week. You know, as far as maybe pulling back your off-ice training a little bit right now. But, it hasn't been as there hasn't been as many question marks this time as there was in March. That was a lot different, because there was even the possibility of we're not even going to come back and finish. And so it's, do you want to keep grinding? Do I take my 3 weeks off? You know what I mean? That was harder to me.
And Zach, what's it been like in terms of skates now? I know that there have been 3 or 4 guys that have going through the testing daily and skating over Atria. Then there's been a bunch of you guys that have skated elsewhere as well, because it's just better skates that usually when you have the numbers, rather than showing up to Atria and you only have 2 or 3 maybe there on a daily basis with no goalies. What have the skates been like? And you know, can you say who you've been skating with? I know guys like Bonino have been pretty much Atria, or other guys have been elsewhere.
Well, I just got off the ice. There was there was Van Riemsdyk, Brock Nelson, Doobie was there, myself, Foligno. I'm missing Mike Riley was there, Gardner. Some good players around. So right now we're just playing on a 3-on-3 mini rink, and just getting some games in there a couple times a week, and then still skating there the other days, but more of just a couple guys on the ice, more of a conditioning type setting. So that's kind of how I've broken it up right now, to try to get the best of playing a little game, staying and getting in better shape, and just splitting them up twice a week. So getting on the ice four times a week.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Devan Dubnyk, and it leads to the question about just the turnover this club has had. And we've talked with players throughout the summer and throughout the offseason. This has to be such a strange time to have a team go through the kind of turnover inside the room that you've gone through and then not have the normal offseason training camp, the guys moving into town and all that kind of stuff. Has that made it difficult to really get a grasp on what it's going to be like with some of these new guys that you've only known as opponents, you haven't known as teammates?
Well, I think that first day is going to be exciting going in, because you think about it, I mean, there's still a lot of good players that haven't signed out there. And then there's a lot of players that move to different places that I even forgot that they're there. Like, a lot of guys, I don't even know where they are right now, just because of how kind of unique it's been, the pause, the break, how long it's been. But for us, I think that, you know, that first day will be exciting, to see all the new faces, see what we have. I mean, you know, how the lines are going to shake out. But, you know, playing against those guys all the time, and then now, you know, you're going to get thrown into a training camp and not have that much time to get together and get ready for the first game. I think it's going to be exciting, and I think guys are ready and looking forward to it.
That reminds me, Zach, of the 2014 Olympic pre-camp that you guys had in Washington, D.C., in Virginia there.
Yeah.
And Bobby Ryan walked in the room with an Ottawa Senators bag, and Suter's goes, "Why do you have a Senators bag?" And Bobby looked at him like from outer space, like, "I was traded there 3 months ago." Like,
right.
Suter had no clue. So.
No, I was skating with Halla today, and you know, talking about good players not signed. I mean, I was kind of asking him what he's got going on, and he was saying, you know, the different teams he's talked to, and so, and then, you know, a player's name came up, and I'm not going to say who it was, but it was a player's name came up, and I totally thought he was still on Vancouver, and he's like, no, he signed, so it's a different place, he got traded, you know, so a lot of those scenarios where I, you know, when you look at Granny too, these yeah. good players that are going to wind up. We don't know where they're going yet, you know, so it's just a lot of question marks.
Yeah. I got a question from Jordan Durand here. It says, which of your new teammates are you most looking forward to playing with on a line potentially? I mean, you know, your new teammates, what are Kaprizov, Bukestad, Rossi, Johansson, Bonino, those are the forwards. Anybody that you're looking forward to really getting to know?
Well, I'm looking forward to getting to know all of them, you know, on a personal basis. And I, from a playing standpoint, I mean, I know Bugy well. I don't know anything about the guy we drafted. I don't know anything really about Kaprizov. So, I mean, there's an excitement of seeing those guys hit the ice and what they're going to bring to the team. And, you know, I'm looking forward to playing with all of them and seeing how they're going to contribute and help to our squad.
There are a couple of questions that we had from fans who were asking about the retro jerseys, and they got to be kind of cool for a guy like you who, like me, grew up here, grew up as a North Star fan originally, the team for whom your dad played, and now you see those colors in a Wild sweater. I thought they were awesome. What'd you think?
Fantastic. I've been an advocate this whole time of, let's get back to some North Star colors here. You know what I mean? I think you still have such a huge connection from the fans here and the North Stars. And I'm glad that they decided to, you know, bring these colors back and bring these uniforms in, because there's still that fan base from the North Stars that's still here, and they still love the Stars no matter what. And since Dallas isn't using those colors, I don't know the deal with rights and all that stuff, but you know, at least since Dallas isn't using that, like, why not throw them our way? And so I'm excited about it. I think it's great. You know, I know we've only worn them something similar, I guess, that one time in warmups, but now to be able to wear them in games, it's going to be awesome.
Somebody asked, yeah,
those old green and golds with the N were some of the all-time
phenomenal
best in the NHL.
Phenomenal. I know, it's so great. I'm so glad we're going to have those.
Somebody asked if you'd ever wear your dad's gloves that you wore in the warmups, but those gloves were, like, I mean, they were enormous, right? You probably could
Huge.
Not wear that in a game.
They were huge, and the leather in those things, I mean, it was so hard to shoot in warmups. Like, it was great, because then I put mine on, I was like, oh my God, my gloves feel so great. This feels so awesome now. But in warmups, that was so hard shooting with those things. They were terrible, but they were huge. They were heavy, but great, great gloves though. They were great.
Yeah. Johnson from Wisconsin, Zach asks, what did it mean to reach 1,000 games last year? And did you save any jersey or mementos from the game for your children? It is amazing, Zach. I mean, if you think about that, that was like a month before the pause. Yep. You know, I mean, I just think about the story that I wrote on you with your wife and your mom from your house and all that work that went into that story. And a month later, who could have ever envisioned that we'd all be just completely paused? But what are your thoughts back to that game in Dallas? And did you save any of the mementos for your kids?
I saved a stick for each one of them. I used a new stick every period, so I kept one for each of them. I got three pairs of gloves that I wore, so I kept all those and the jerseys. It was great, you know, and I thought it was really nice of the Stars to, I mean, the irony of it being in Dallas.
Yep.
I thought it was really nice of them to, you know, recognize that and throw my dad on the Jumbotron. But leading up, I told you this before, like leading up to it, I didn't, yeah, it's 1,000, you know, I didn't really think much of it. But then I think when you just start to grasp, you know, playing 1,000 games in the National Hockey League, I mean, it's a really neat accomplishment. And I was really proud of it. It's not easy to do, and it takes a lot of durability. And so it was really special and to be able to celebrate it with the guys and my family. And it was really special. I was, it was really neat.
And as you mentioned, imagine how many games you'd be at if you didn't have to endure two lockouts, a pandemic, and a back injury.
I would have gotten this one in about 2014. I know. So I know I should have hit it a long time ago.
Well, I was just going to ask you about that, though, because you talk about the durability that you have to have, and that gets magnified when you play so much of the game in the areas where you have been as well known as anybody for playing, and that the tight, hard areas around the net, the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of cross checks in the back from defensemen around the NHL over your career. And you fought through injuries, but you know, when you look at it, it's most years it's been, you've still found a way to play 68 games, 70 games. And so for some of those seasons that you had to grind, that has to make getting to that 1,000 even more rewarding because of the fact that it wasn't just coasting there. It was that you had to fight through a lot of stuff to make that happen.
Yeah, that's, I never want to get away from, you never want to get away from your niche, but you always try to broaden your game and make the game easier on yourself. But, you know, people joke with me about it. Like, you know, the range for me to score a goal, it's never fails. We're talking just barely outside the crease. And it's, so I know for me that I have to get there. But at the same time, you know, it just, you want to be a player that's known again as durable. And, you know, to me, there's still something special about playing in all the games in a season, 82 games. There's something to it. And I just, you know, it's been kind of disappointing that the last few years it haven't hit that number. Some of it's been out of my control. A lot of it's been out of my control, but I'm hoping that I'll stay injury free the next little while and be able to finish and get to the 80s again.
You ever wonder, with all the times that the NHL has decided to put a point of emphasis on some rule, like eliminating the hooking and holding, and how different it would have been if they would have said at some point, you know what we're going to eliminate? We're going to eliminate the two-handed cross check in the back of a forward standing out in front of the net.
Yep. And that's, to me, that's the most bizarre thing, because I always say, if in that same scenario I turn around and I cross check him in the back and knock him down, I will go to the box 10 out of 10 times,
no doubt.
But the roles reversed, and they don't, and it's funny because they always say they want to create offense, we want more offense. And the irony in that, the fact that you can't do anything to give yourself a little more space, but you have to take it. You have to take this cross check the whole time. It's just, it's a little bizarre to me.
Yeah. Who's given you the roughest time there in those turns? Like, who's the one defenseman that you, when you see them on the schedule, you say, all right, here's a night where I'm going to have backs on the spine or sticks on the spine all night long.
The one guy, he doesn't play anymore, but the one guy you're just like, son of a beat was Pronger. It was the one guy that I was like, and I feel like,
and mean,
you know, it's mean, but I always feel like the refs were almost a little scared of him, a little scared to call him. So, but he was dirty and he was mean and he knew where to get you too. He knew where to cross check you. He knew where to whack you. And that he was the one guy you're just like, gosh, like this one's going to suck tonight. This one's going to be tough tonight. Yeah. But he's the one guy.
Zach, confirm or deny this. I was talking to a player the other day that said that Ryan Suter is actually one of the most secretly, like, sort of not dirty, but players that is the toughest to play in front of the net, that he has this, like, sly, shrewd little stick work that constantly is jabbing you. If he does, he hides it pretty well. But is that accurate?
I think it's a combination of he does have that one-handed slash that goes uncalled a lot. He's really good at that. But he's got that farm strength that is really frustrating to play against. And I see it in practice. I mean, it's, you think you got him beat or you think you got a step on him. He's got that, you know, it's just a knack, to hit you in the right spot or to whack you at the right time in the right spot. It's not dirty, but it's frustrating. You know, right. It's really frustrating, and he's just smart about it. That's the difference.
And here's a word from some of our sponsors. Make sure you're staying cozy and warm through the holidays this year. Aquarius Home Services Connecticut offers a free new heating and cooling system estimate in your home or your cabin. Make sure you are prepared for the cold and prevent a disaster breakdown. They offer solutions to fit your specific needs, including mini split ductless heating cooling systems. And during the holidays, they are offering a new furnace for as low as $45 per month. No down payment, no repay penalty. At Aquarius Home Services Connecticut, they guarantee their work and give you upfront pricing. Contact Aquarius Home Services Connecticut today. You can visit them at AquariusHomeServices.com.
You choose your home and car for a reason. They were the right fit for you. So why not make sure your insurance is the right fit too? Here's the deal. At State Farm, you can combine home and auto and save an average of $889. That's right. To combine and save, call State Farm agent Tony Hoagland. He's at 763-421-4900. Or check out the website at ChamplinInsurance.com.
Becca, I got a question from Mary here, a really sweet one. Says, we often hear about JP, but not so much about your mom. In what ways does your mother influence your growth as an athlete, citizen, and community causes? Tell us a little bit about Donna.
Donna's great. I think in her defense, she's kind of flown under the radar, the whole thing. I mean, we were telling you, so she's been waiting for that one time where instead it says son of Donna Parisi instead of son of JP. You know what I mean? Like this, she's been waiting for that. But you know, I think back to it now, especially with my kids and how busy they are and what they've got going on. The amount of time that she took me from baseball to hockey, back to baseball, or from one team to another team for hockey. You know, I mean, it was crazy. And now seeing it firsthand with us carting around, she's incredible, you know. And then on top of that, making the food and getting everything. I mean, she was incredible. And so I think, you know, she deserves a lot of the credit. And she was a great mom. She was very, you know, disciplined. But she gave us every opportunity and made sure we were everywhere we needed to be. She did a great job.
I think you're not alone. There are probably millions of people out there who have suddenly gained an appreciation for what it takes to manage a household, more appreciation for what it takes to manage a household and to teach kids during this pandemic and the shutdown and the time at home. But on the other hand, I'm curious if my wife was awesome with that. Margo made sure our house stayed afloat for years and shuttled kids everywhere they had to be while I was traveling. And But what has been one of the blessings in disguise during this time has been, you know, my kids are much older than yours. We've had a chance to spend so much quality time as a family during this period from March to now, so much with my kids as adult ages that it ordinarily wouldn't have been there. And for you, your kids are different age, but you normally would have been gone so much more than you have been. Have you experienced the same thing where just some of those moments and some of that extra time with kids that you wouldn't have ordinarily had? Is it something, I think we're going to look back at this time in my house and say, you know what, that 2020, we had to fight through it, but it turned out to be pretty cool because we had some great times together.
Yeah, you know, I've been able to go on the ice with Jackson's team a lot until they stopped. But I was going on to all of his practices. I got to coach Emmy's soccer team, which I wouldn't have been able to do. I've been able to go, you know, watch them do a lot of things that a lot of times we'd be traveling. I would have missed. Theo and I have really bonded over this time, you know, he doesn't want me to leave the house now. So, to your point, it has been a special time where it's so many opportunities that I get to be with them where I wouldn't be. So I think we are enjoying it. I mean, I would like to get everything back to normal, but I think we are enjoying the time that we have been able to spend together, just knowing our schedules that, you know, just wouldn't be happening right now if we'd be in the season.
We're talking to Zach Parise, the all-time leading goal scorer amongst Minnesota-born players. And Zach's actually on his way to pick up Jackson. So if you do have to run, Zach, just don't be shy. Just tell us. Let me ask you, you know, leadership. You know, this is a team now that suddenly needs a captain. Mikko Koivu is gone. What will life be without Mikko Koivu? And you know, you've worn the C before, Zach, both internationally and with the New Jersey Devils. How much would it be an honor if you are the person that could put on that C?
Well, it's always special to be a captain of a National Hockey League team. I mean, it doesn't get a lot better than that. So I would love the opportunity. You know, I've done it before, and I really enjoyed it. You know, as far as Mikko goes, he did a great job for the organization. I think we can all appreciate his dedication to the team and to the community here. I think it's going to be a little different not seeing number nine out there for our squad. You know, as far as where we go from here, I guess we'll see what the coaches and what Bill has in mind. I don't really know what they've got planned, but whatever it is, to me, whatever it is, I think whoever it's going to be, I think you've got a good cast of players around where you'd have a good support system, and to me, that's really important. Mm-hmm. You'd have the people, the group, the veterans supporting whoever gets that C, and yeah, to me that's a good leadership group. And so it'll be exciting to see who it will be, and you'll see everyone rally around that person, and it'll be great.
Everybody does have a different leadership style, Zach. Can you discuss that and how, you know, maybe Koivu's leadership style might differ from, say, yours or a Foligno or a Spurgeon or a Suter?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's different. To me, it's you're picked captain because of what you are and how you carry yourself. Not, you don't become captain and then change and try to be something different. I think that sometimes can get lost in the shuffle. So, you know, Mikko had his way. You know, he wasn't overly vocal, but you knew he was going to show up and play. And so that to me, that was his type of leadership, and which was great. And you know, when I was captain in New Jersey, we had I was 27. We had a pretty veteran team at the time. So I and the veteran players were great as far as helping me out, because you know, a lot of those guys had won the cup before I hadn't. So you know, they put a lot of faith in me and in Lou's decision to make me the captain. But at the same time, as I was always going to them going to Marty, going to these guys, going to Pando, going to these guys, hey, you know, what do you guys think? I want your guys' opinion. This is a group thing, you know, and then they would tell me, and then I'd be the one that has to go into Lou's office and try and make this decision. But it was a group thing, and it worked out really well for us. And I had the support of Kovalchuk and all the guys that we were all going for the same thing. And that's what was understood.
It'll be interesting. And you talk about Mikko's style, and it worked for Mikko. It's not necessarily not every captain is wired that way, but it sure seemed to be the right model in this, at least in this room. How much does it really change? You talk about guys with different styles. How much does that bleed through to the rest of a team? I mean, can a guy really change the way some other guys think and act around the rink based on his leadership style?
I do believe so, because I think you have young players that are very impressionable. And to me, if you see your leader or your leaders doing the right things, showing up for practice and practicing the right way and working on their game, playing the game the right way, to me, at least to me, when I was younger, that was contagious. You know, it was like, holy cow, this guy's doing this. And so I better be out there at the same time working on my game. I mean, I think there's a trickle-down effect, and you watch a guy play a game and compete the right way. To me, you should be saying to yourself, wow, I should be doing that too. And so I think when you have the young players that are trying to find their way, trying to find their niche, trying to learn how to, because the NHL is not an easy league. And I just think when you have young players that are trying to find their way, it's important to have the right people to look up to and the right people to have showing you the way. And I was lucky always playing for a veteran team when I was younger, and you know, with the Langenbrunners, with the Pandolfos, with Marty, you know, I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Fame goalie that he would not want to let in a goal the entire practice. Like, he competed all practice. And even as a goalie, you're watching this guy's accomplished everything in the league, and he's still competing like this. And so it rubs off on you, and it makes you a better player.
One of those young guys that we saw really emerge for this team last year was Kevin Fiala. I mean, if you look at what he looked like when he arrived in the trade the season before, the way he finished that season, and even the way he started last season, and then compare it to what he looked like in February and into March as the season was winding down last year, it didn't even look like the same player. What did you see from him as a teammate in the way his game progressed?
Oh, I saw someone, you know, I'll never know what it's like to be, it had to have been hard to get traded midseason, to get traded for I think I would call Granny a fan favorite. You know, he was a great player for us. To get traded for him and then just things didn't work out the way he had planned, I think, when he came, and just kind of didn't really find a groove, and then to start the next year, just was having trouble finding his way. But to me, I think when Dean took over, he gave him an opportunity, and Dean had faith in him. And it was like a switch went off right when Dean took over. He had that confidence in him as a player that, and to me, that goes a long way. When you know that the coach is behind you and supports you, that goes a long way. And to me, that's all it was. I mean, you knew he had the skill. There was never a question about the skill. It's just, can you bring it on a regular basis? And do you have the support from the staff behind you? And that was the biggest difference to me. And all of a sudden, he was just a new player, and he got a hot stick, and there was just no stopping him. It was incredible.
Did you notice a difference in the whole team in a feel from that way when the coaching change happened, where there was confidence might not be the right word, but just a different trust in the players from the head coach?
I do. And anytime there's a coaching change, you have that little jolt. But I do think there was a big change. There was a just mentality, our practice habits changed, our game habits changed. I think our game habits changed a lot. And it really from top to bottom of the lineup. I think it just, you saw, it was almost just a different mentality. And I think it suited us better. It suited our group better.
How, you know, Kaprizov's another one. We were just talking about Fiala that's coming here. Fans have, and media have pumped this kid up for 5 years, and he's coming now here, 23 years old. I think a lot of people are just going to instantly expect him to be a star. Do you expect, one, an adjustment for him? And two, what roles do you think that you and some of the vets can play in helping a young guy like Kaprizov adjust to not only the NHL game, but this is a kid coming from Russia that's barely ever been out of there that's now suddenly going to parachute into Minnesota in the middle of a pandemic and be forced to learn the area, learn the game, and learn the language?
Yeah, you know, to me, you have to make him feel comfortable. I think that's the first and foremost. You make him feel comfortable here, being here. You know, whether it's you take him out for lunch or you bring him over to your house to your family, and just, you know, make him feel a part of this right away. Get that comfort before we start playing. And you know, and then I'm optimistic. I don't know. There's got to be an adjustment, you know, from the KHL to the NHL, and you know, hopefully he'll hop in right away and play great for us. But if that doesn't happen, that's okay too. I mean, I think it's going to be important to let him develop and let him get comfortable playing here, and not, you know, it sounds like he's going to have a lot of pressure put on him and pressure on him just from the hype, and he's earned it. You know, don't get me wrong. Like, he has earned it. He is, from what I gather, played great, and we're all excited to have him. And if there is a learning curve, that's okay. I just think, you know, give him the opportunity, put him in a position to succeed, and let him grow. And I think he's going to do really well for us.
Have you had any communication with Marco Rossi?
I have not. No.
Anytime you get a guy like that, I mean, it's interesting, and you've been around the league long enough now where you've seen guys that get drafted in the upper end of the first round, and there's a ton of hype, and sometimes those guys are ready and jump in and have immediate impacts in the NHL. Sometimes it takes years before we ever see him, if we ever see him as an impact guy. And that's got to be something that is these guys are all coming from a point where they've, for most of their life, been the best player on their team. When you look back on that, I mean, what is that like as a player where for the first time you step on the ice in an NHL training camp and suddenly it's not only are you not maybe the best player on the ice, but you're fighting just to get a spot on the 20-man roster sheet for the whatever night it might be. I mean, that's got to be an unbelievable adjustment for a player mentally.
It is. And I mean, I think it's exciting that we were able to draft him. It's an adjustment. I mean, you're still talking about the best league in the world, you know, so it's never an easy transition to hop in and play. I mean, guys are good. Guys are really good players. Again, going back to what I was saying about Kaprizov, there will be an adjustment period. I mean, it's just the way it goes, and it's okay to bring someone along slowly. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with it, because you want them to be successful. You want them to be able to contribute when the time is right and when they're ready. So if they're ready right away, then by all means, let's go. But it's not an easy league, and you know, sometimes you have to have patience with the young players and let them grow. And I think that's an exciting part of where we are as an organization, is you've got this young talent that we all should be really excited about. And let's, you know, these guys are going to be good players in the NHL in the near future. We hope it's going to be right away.
It's like in 04 when you sign with the Devils. I still remember the funniest part of that Alicia interview with Donna and you was when Alicia was telling the story when you told her that you were signing with the Devils, and she's like, all right, when are you going to be back? And
yeah, like, when are you coming back?
Never.
I know. No, that's it. I'm selling my books back to the school store. I'm out of here.
Here's a word from some of our other sponsors. If you know me, you know my weight fluctuates, especially during hockey season. Well, when I continued the bad habits during the quarantine. I got in touch with Profile by Sanford and started right away. The program's developed by doctors to take the guesswork out of weight loss. I've already crossed the 70-pound mark, and I know I can keep it going. One big reason is the personal coaching I get with Danette, who right from this podcast, I'm going to talk to her. I talk to her on a weekly basis. I go over the challenges and I see for the upcoming week, and away I go. I'll talk to her about Thanksgiving today and how I stay on track. I follow their activities app. Their food is delicious and I feel constant support. So what are you waiting for? There's 6 locations in the Twin Cities. So for more information, go to profileplan.com and tell them that Russo sent you. Again, profileplan.com.
Special message from Scott and Twill. We hope this message finds you and your loved ones safe and healthy. As the holiday season is fast approaching, we want to reach out and ask that you prioritize shopping local this season more than ever. As concerns over COVID-19 continue to rise, we're taking more extreme safety measures. We have a number of ways you can shop with us safely. Private appointments, phone consultations, personal delivery, or curbside package pickups are all an option if you're concerned about shopping in person. If you do choose to come to the Galleria, you can be assured that Twill has never been cleaner, and Twill is enforcing distancing measures with a limited number of guests. Twill appreciates your support now more than ever, and the selection of gift ideas in the store is fantastic. We would love to help you put a few Twill gift boxes under your tree. Please email Scott directly at scott@twillmn.com or call the store. We can guarantee you'll have a safe shopping experience with us this season. We look forward to helping you soon. That is from Scott Dayton of Twill. They've been with us for a long time. It's a great local business.
Couple more questions with Zach Parisi, and we'll let him go. And by the way, starting Tuesday to Saturday, December 1st to the 5th, and I'll put it out on social media, the links, but the Backuses, the Zuckers, the Parisis, I think the Spurgeons, the Bukesteads, the Hollas, Dowds, Felinos, and Rudolphs, I'm trying to remember exactly what it is, but you're creating mini Christmas trees and filling with boxes of some of your favorite items, and they're going to be auctioned off to benefit Give 16, the Masonic Children's Hospital, and Athletes for Animals. So look for that next week. I'll put it on my social media, but Zach and Alicia are part of that as well. Alex, Zach asks, what is your all-time favorite Minnesota goal, and what's it like to be the all-time Minnesota leading goal scorer?
My favorite
goal that you scored here?
My favorite goal would probably be the one in game 6 against Colorado to tie, well, the eventual game winner, I think, with like 5 minutes left in game 6.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite, most exciting at the time. And what was the second one?
Just to be the all-time leading goal scorer for Minnesota, I mean, you look at some of the names on that list that you're atop. And as I mentioned, 9 power play goals from tying Phil Housley for all time.
It's great company to be in. I mean, especially, with a guy like Neil Broughton, some guy that I grew up loving watching play, to be on a list with a guy like that, it's really humbling. And it's rewarding, it's when you can be with that group, when you know that the work that you've put in to get here and to get there, it's pretty special. And it's one of those things that once all is said and done, you look back at these things that you did and maybe my kids will be impressed by it one day. We'll see. it was a nice dinner topic one day.
Yeah.
It's interesting when Michael asked you the question about your goal, I started running through my mind, like which one stood out to me. And the first one I landed on, the second one I landed on is the same one you did, the game 6, the game winner, which was actually, if I remember right, didn't you score the first goal of that game too?
I did, yep.
I think, yeah. But I remember the first goal, the final night of the regular season the year before, when you had to win, you'd gotten blown out at home by Edmonton the night before, had to go to Denver and win. And I remember you scoring the first goal in that game at the Pepsi Center that was kind of like the, okay, and needed a win to get in the playoffs. And it was, I kind of felt like that goal was just, this is why you go and acquire one of the elite goal scorers in the NHL, is so that when the season's on the line and you need somebody to make a play, he makes a play. And it was almost poetic that you scored the first goal of that game.
Right. Good memory. I didn't think about that. I remember we could have locked it up the night before and, a team against Edmonton that was way out of it. And we laid an egg at home and it was like, oh boy, now we got to go into Colorado. Regardless, right. they were still a tough team to play against. I know they weren't having a good year, but you never know going into that rink. we've had a lot of exciting games in that place. And yeah, I forgot about that one, getting the first one.
One of the most exciting games there was opening night, the first road game, the year that you had the hat trick and you guys rallied back, scored, I think, the fastest 3 or 4 goals ever in the third period.
Yeah, yeah. Opening that night, year. That's right.
It's all these Colorado games, isn't it?
Man. I know.
Well, you know, there's another one that came to mind for me, which was the season that you wound up playing Colorado in the playoffs. You guys were fizzling a little bit down the stretch and played a game in Phoenix on a road trip where it was like something's got to happen here to get this thing turned around. It's one of my favorite Russo stories because he blew up at me at dinner before the game, threw his glasses at me when I said I still thought the Wild were going to make the playoffs and screamed, you look at the schedule and point to me the games are going to win.
In Arizona,
right. And yeah, yeah. And yep. That night, Arizona, well, it was Phoenix at the time, the Coyotes, but it was the Wild were down going into the third period. And I know you scored the tying goal, and I think you might have scored a second one in that third period that night in what turned out to be a season-saving win for Minnesota. And it was maybe 8 games left in the season or something like that, and the Wild wound up making their way into the playoffs.
Isn't that when
that night was a turning point.
So that was my dad was on that trip.
Right.
And it's funny you say that, too, because then, which I should have remembered, that was those two goals where I tied him and I passed him for his, how many goals he had scored in the NHL. So that was a really special one. I should have put that one at the top because personally, that one really meant a lot that he was there for that.
It's funny. Yep. I'm just looking at that picture now. I got it on my phone of you and your dad posing on the bench with holding the two pucks. So it was pretty.
We were real in that time because I think we went from,
yes,
we were down 1-0 and, you know, we weren't doing that great. And Mikko said to me, he goes, come off behind me. I'm going to win the drawback and just take a shot. So he won it right back on my tape. I stepped into it and hit the far blocker. And then I think Spurge scored like 2 minutes after that. And all of a sudden we're up 2-1. And then we went in, we won in LA, one in Chicago. We're like, holy cow, like we're back, you know?
Right. And that trip had started with a loss, like a one-sided loss in St. Louis. And I remember, like, I have vivid memories of being around that hotel on the off day in between, and the team didn't practice, and there were all these little meetings going on in the courtyard at that hotel in Glendale where it was, you look over here and it was, you know, you and Ryan and Mikko talking, and you look over here and it was another group of 2 or 3. And I was, I just had this feeling like it was a kind of a mental reset day for a lot of these guys. Like, look, this season, we're not going to let this get away. And so then that next night for you to have the night you did was big.
So it was, I think a lot of times these player, you know, closed door meetings, you know, I mean, I've never seen a meeting with open doors, but you know, these closed door meetings get a little too much coverage, but, that was one where it was like, we met in the hotel lobby or the basement the night before that Phoenix game and knowing what was on the line. It was like, hey guys, we either win tomorrow or it's over. You know what I mean? Like this is over. So that was the gist of it. Let's be ready to play. And then we took off from there and it was a great finish to the season for us.
Yeah. That was the genesis of the meltdown, because I had heard that once you got to Chicago, that there could be a new coach in Laviolette waiting.
That's news
what I was
to me.
Trying to convey to Anthony, who likes to exaggerate the story, other than the glasses being thrown at his face.
The glasses being thrown and the point at the schedule and look at the schedule and point at the games they're going to win the rest of the way. That's an exact quote.
We defied the odds.
I'm so glad that Anthony joined this podcast. I appreciate it.
Somebody's got to come on here to keep Russo honest when he's just talking about how the I knew this was going to happen. I said, well,
and that night, you got to fact check him every once in a while. Fact check.
Exactly. And Zach, you'd appreciate this too, because the other two people at dinner were Chad Graff, who was covering the team for the Pioneer Press at the time, and Kevin Gorg. And Kevin Gorg lived and dies with the Minnesota Wild. If the Minnesota Wild lose, it's like he was playing, it's like he was the losing goaltender that night. I mean, he gets on the bus, he can't talk, he was so nervous at dinner that night before the game that he couldn't eat. We were sitting at the Yard House in Glendale there by the arena. He was so nervous that he could not eat because he was so worried the team was not going to make the playoffs. And so I got him, like, nerves just beyond belief. I got Russo, you know, yelling at me because I'm saying, well, I think they're going to win tonight and probably make make the playoffs. And so that's what the pregame meals are like with this crew.
I love it. I love I love the passion out of Gorgie. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no doubt.
And you add Van Myers to some of these dinners, and that's always a treat too. So,
oh boy.
Yeah,
that's been a recent and not always positive addition.
I was going to say, it just brings the negativity right in there.
Well, hey, just really appreciate you coming on, Zach. And, you know, let me just ask you a couple personal things. Obviously, one thing is it's starting to get cold. Are you going to have a backyard rink this year?
Yeah, they just came and put it up this week. So we're just, I don't have the line or anything, but the boards, the netting, the lights, everything's up. So we're ready to go.
That's awesome. And lastly, what do you do in the middle of a pandemic during this very weird Thanksgiving week? What's going to be the plans tomorrow for the big Parisi household?
We are going to have, I mean, maybe this might have to get censored, but my mom's going to come over. against everyone's wishes, my mom will be at my house and we're going to have Thanksgiving. So it'll be us, the family, and my mom. So it'll be great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey, Zach, as always, really, really appreciate it. It'll be one day, hope to actually see you face-to-face again. It's very strange times. Yeah, I know. Although, you know, who knows? I mean, we might be doing Zooms indefinitely.
That's true.
I mean, this is just, it's just such a crazy time. But hopefully the NHL and the NHLPA could figure this thing out. We have a date to kind of look forward to in the next little bit. And really appreciate you coming on with us, and say hi to your family.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
Have a great Thanksgiving, Zach. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks.
So there you have it. Zach Parisi with Anthony LaPanta and me. And Zach is always one of my favorite people to talk to. It's always a pleasure covering him with the Minnesota Wild. And again, thanks for, as always, for listening to War Seats in the House with Anthony LaPanta and Michael Russo, brought to you by Profile by Sanford, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatments, Twill in the Edina Galleria, State Farm agent Tony Hoagland, and Bosch Law Firm. Pretty little city built on a hillside. Music in the bars and fire in the sky. We went to the beach and it was covered in ice. And I used to call it home. So much coming out. There's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never gonna win. Oh, but the world won't forgive.